company for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll analyze Election Day results and the impact on federal employees with AFGE National President J. David Cox and Legislative and Political Director Beth Moten. We'll also discuss the importance of Veterans Day with AFGE Legislative Representative Marilyn Park and the role of FEMA in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy with Local 4060 President Robert Autry. With me first, Beth Moten, AFGE's Legislative and Political Director. Beth, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jason. It's good to be back.
Beth, the results are in. President Obama has won a second term in the White House. How does that make you feel today?
It makes me feel very happy indeed. I think that it was on quite a roller coaster there the last 4 or 5 weeks, and you know, we never lost heart, but we did get a little scared a couple of times, and it was wonderful to see how hard our members worked to do everything they could to make sure that the president won wherever they were, but particularly in the battleground states. I think our members were just incredibly engaged and eager to do what they could to bring the president back to office.
Beth, before we get into some of these key races and wins in the House and the Senate, I'm wondering what this Election Day result means in terms of taking the message of AFGE's members to Capitol Hill and how you're going to go about doing your business going forward.
Well, you know, the only way I know about how to go forward is to do what we have always done best, which is to be up on Capitol Hill day in and day out and to make sure that our members are in constant contact with their representatives and senators. Today is a good day. It's a good day to celebrate, and it's been a big victory. But the reality is, you know, tomorrow, but definitely starting next Tuesday when the Congress returns, we're going to be in the middle of a very complicated lame duck that nobody knows which way it's going to go yet. And so we've got to be able to move directly into ensuring that our members are working hard to make sure that the people that they just elected or reelected are held accountable and will do what they promised to do, which is to look out for the middle class. And our members, Jason, as you well know, are nothing if not middle class. So, you know, we're eager to get back up on Capitol Hill with members of Congress and talking about the things that really make a big difference to our members, like their pay raises and their pensions and their health insurance benefits and, of course, their jobs.
And you bring up a great point, and that's something that we have mentioned on this program many times, that throughout the campaign season, there was an attempt to separate federal employees from the middle class, when in reality, they really are one and the same.
They absolutely are. And, you know, one of the things that's been so worrisome to us about this constant drumbeat by the Republicans that we can't be raising taxes on anybody. Well, they were very eager to raise taxes on federal employees. Those increases in pension contributions that were in the Ryan budget plan, which was an increase in a federal employee's contribution to his pension of over 5%. Well, that scores in budget parlance. It scores as a tax increase. And for somebody who's making $23,000 a year as a nursing assistant in a psychiatric ward in a VA hospital, making $23,000 a year, that 5% pay cut would have hurt, and it really would have hurt badly. So I feel like we've made a lot of progress in being able to push back. With the success of the election means that I think the Ryan budget per se is dead with all of its appalling draconian cuts. But we're still, you know, looking down the road here very quickly at this potential for sequestration if there's not some sort of negotiated settlement that's reached. But we're also doing everything we can to try to make sure people realize that we do not have enough revenues coming in. And if the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy expire, we would never even need to consider sequestration. That would be a wash. So we've got a lot of work to do to make sure that message is not only getting there from me and my legislative staff here in Washington, but most importantly from our members back home.
Beth, when you look at the president's performance last night, he picked up a number of key wins in states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Iowa, Colorado, Nevada, Wisconsin. When you look at it legislatively, what does that say to you about the country as a whole?
Well, you know, you've also just named a lot of states that had really serious Senate races. Some of those were reelection opportunities for people, and some of those were challenges that we ended up being victorious in. We're still trying to find out exactly what's happened in Montana and North Dakota. But at the moment, those races are actually looking very encouraging. And, you know, I think what we've got to remember is just that the Senate has already been on record supporting federal employees over and over and over again. And if we end up with a United States Senate that looks very much like the Senate that we've been working with these last couple of years, I think we will definitely be in a good place. The House of Representatives is still going to be very problematic for us. I don't think anybody can kid themselves. John Boehner is not going to suddenly stop listening to the Tea Party contingent of his caucus. He's going to continue to heed their calls way too much, in our opinion, and that's going to be something we have to push against. But with the president being reelected and with a Democratic Senate that is full of people who really truly support federal employees and their union, I think we've got a real chance to make some progress. But certainly, I think we've got a real chance to hold off some bad stuff that otherwise was absolutely inevitable if Romney had been elected and if we'd lost the Senate.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Beth Moten, AFGE's legislative and political director. Beth, in your analysis of the Senate, there are a number of, obviously, you said, labor-friendly senators out there willing to work with AFGE, the likes of Sherrod Brown, Claire McCaskill, Bob Casey, Ben Cardin, Debbie Stabenow. But there are a few others now here coming into the mix. I'm thinking Tim Kaine in Virginia, Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, and maybe even Joe Donnelly from Indiana. What do you think about some of those newcomers in terms of advocacy for federal employees?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Joe Donnelly, Martin Heinrich from New Mexico, and Tammy Baldwin, let me see if there's any, and Chris Murphy from Connecticut, Tammy Baldwin, Wisconsin, Chris Murphy, Connecticut, all are currently representatives in the House. And they have records that we are very, very familiar with. We sent out a lot of mail to our members reminding them exactly how people like Baldwin and Murphy and Donnelly and Martin Heinrich had voted, and Mazie Hirono in Hawaii, how strong their labor records were, their federal employee labor records were, as they've been in the House of Representatives, because we have every reason to believe that they'll carry those same values with them into the Senate. And then, you know, Elizabeth Warren's pro-middle-class, anti-Wall Street message is something that is a very it's a breath of fresh air, because she doesn't come with her own legislative record. Of course, she comes out of Harvard Law School as a professor, but she's also, you know, been the person who created this Consumer Protection Bureau so that Americans would stop getting ripped off by credit card companies and other corporations that were trying to do everything they could to hurt the middle class. And she's going to be a fierce advocate on behalf of the middle class and, by extension, federal employees. We were very heavily engaged in her campaign. You know, Tim Kaine, I cannot say enough good things about. I think while he does not have the kind of legislative record that I was talking about with these other, you know, former, who will soon be former House members going into the Senate, we know who Tim Kaine is because he was governor, he was lieutenant governor, he was mayor of Richmond. But more importantly, you know, during the course of this campaign, he has reached out to our members in a way that nobody else has done, doing a lot of town halls with federal employees and talking specifically about the things that concern federal workers. And, you know, he's a really smart guy, but he's also a really kind, genuine human being, and I think he completely gets it, that federal employment is a sacred decision that people make, and that he wants to respect that and honor it and do everything he can to make sure that our people have the resources they need to do the jobs that they need to do to help the American people.
And when you look at the House, and obviously it's going to stay Republican, but and especially in this area here in the Maryland and Northern Virginia area, a lot of champions coming back: John Sarbanes, Donna Edwards, Steny Hoyer, Chris Van Hollen, Elijah Cummings, Jerry Connolly, Jim Moran, but a couple of newcomers too: Tammy Duckworth, perhaps in Illinois, and even Alan Grayson, an AFGE member back from Florida.
That's right. I mean, I think you just named all the people that we will, you know, feel every responsibility and eagerness to go back to and ask them to continue to carry our water, because you know, we're going to have some serious problems. And when you're on the House floor and you're facing a hostile amendment from a Tea Party lawmaker, you need somebody who's going to stand up and fight. And the people that you all named have very strong reputations for doing just that, standing up and fighting.
Beth, do you think that despite a Republican leadership in the House, that with that group of people that I just mentioned, and perhaps even more, that that's enough to champion through some of these federal employee initiatives that AFGE is so concerned about?
Yes, I think it probably is. We won't win every single vote on the House floor, and we won't win every single vote in committees. But some committees are better for us than others. And, you know, we managed to get through the defense authorization markup in the House Armed Services Committee with really terrible numbers of scary right-wing lawmakers on that committee. And nevertheless, we had two or three amendments come up, and we won every single one of them. And I think sometimes people just realize that their side maybe has gone too far. And some of the more rational members on the Republican side can be brought around, especially if they're getting some pressure from Democrats. So I think that's helpful.
Beth, you mentioned near the top of the interview here about the lame duck Congress. Can you just give us a little more information on that and what we might be able to expect in the months ahead?
Yes, the Congress will return on Tuesday the 13th, and I don't know. I guess they'll probably be out the week of the 19th, more or less, certainly for the Thanksgiving period. And then I think they'll be back, and I think they could be back here, you know, through Christmas. They could be back here through New Year's, for all I know. But there's going to be a lot of pressure to deal with this so-called fiscal cliff, and we are going to be pushing back against this notion that the country is in such desperate straits that we need to push ourselves into another recession by contracting federal spending at a time when we really need to be spending more money on government services and putting people back to work. So we're going to be talking a lot about tax fairness, and we're going to be talking about the need for an additional stimulus so that people, you know, the American Jobs Act, which has not been enacted, that definitely needs to be pushed through, because we need to put some people, you know, in the private sector and state and local governments back to work. And when we do that, when they're building bridges and roads and they're, you know, making sure that state and local agencies are running properly, well, those people, when they go back to work, they'll pay federal taxes. And when they do that, our members' jobs will become more secure as well. But it's going to be a tough negotiation. We're going to have to be in there slugging it out. It's not going to be a time for shrinking violence, and we're going to make sure our members remember that, because they're going to have to be doing exactly the same thing, which is knocking on the doors of the people that they love, but not being certain that the people that they love that they just reelected or elected for the first time, but certainly that for the lame duck, the people that they've known and trusted for so long, those people are still going to need to get some pressure, because this deficit reduction mantra, which sort of takes Washington by storm sometimes, and you can't figure out why anybody thinks this is the right time to engage in deficit reduction. But we've got to push back against that. We've got to do so in a clear and thoughtful but very aggressive way.
Beth Moten, AFGE's legislative and political director. Beth, it's always fun to have you on the program. Thanks for coming on today and explaining some of these results to us.
My pleasure, Jason. Thanks so much for the invitation.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our Election Day analysis and the impact on federal employees with AFGE National President J. David Cox.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by J. David Cox, AFGE's national president. President Cox, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Jason. Glad to be here.
President Cox, the vote is in. Americans have reelected President Obama for 4 more years. I know this election has a deep and personal meaning to you. Tell me your thoughts here after Election Day.
Look, Jason, I have told folks I'm not on cloud 9. I'm on cloud 29. We've reelected Barack Obama. AFG members went out, worked very hard for his reelection. So we're very, very pleased that has been accomplished and very, very excited about the members that have been elected to the U.S. Senate. So we couldn't be happier today. Just could not be happier.
President Cox, what did the impact of the labor vote have on this and labor's ground game in this presidential election?
Jason, as I was watching the returns on election night, it was very clear. NBC called Ohio for President Obama, and as they called it, they said, labor won Ohio for President Obama. The ground game, not only in Ohio, but nationwide, that labor provides. We put the boots on the ground. We are the door knockers. We're the telephone workers. We call people. We're the canvassers. We are the poll workers and the poll watchers. Labor is always out there in every election, and we produce results. And so clearly we played a significant role in this process.
Now, over the weeks ahead, we're going to hear many different stories about how certain groups turned out the vote and really made a difference in this election, President Cox. But I imagine, as someone who has been a part of the labor movement for his entire working life, that knowing labor's turnout in this has to have a very special meaning for you.
It's a great meeting to me, Jason. I mean, I was involved in the Virginia elections. I was over there day after day, walking, knocking on doors, talking to union members and union households in Virginia. So, it's great to win. I mean, we won for President Obama in Virginia. We won for Senator-elect Tim Kaine. So, I mean, it was a good winning day in Virginia as well as other places in the country.
And while we may be in celebratory mode now, there is work to be done. I'm wondering what your first priority is now, leading the union in the weeks and months ahead.
Number one, clearly standing our ground. Federal employees are not an ATM machine. We are going to push back as hard as we can. No attacks upon federal employee pay. No further pay freezes. Also, when the federal employees receive their pay raise this coming year, that we are pushing for the back pay to January 1, and we will take the administration and the Congress to task over that, that we clearly want that back pay from January 1. No increases in federal employee retirement contributions, none whatsoever. The federal employee retirement pension fund is fully funded. There is no need to increase contributions. So we'll be taking very, very firm stances on all of those issues.
President Cox, how optimistic are you that you'll be able to get some time with the White House quickly to address those issues?
Well, Jason, we will be reaching out, as we've always done, through the process that we have for raising our issues with the White House and making those things known. We will be immediately on the Hill with our friends that were reelected and the new members that were just elected, pushing our agenda as well as reminding them that, their elections were a success because of the work that AFGE and other unions did throughout the process.
President Cox, earlier you mentioned Tim Kaine, and this is a race that we must discuss for just a minute. Tim Kaine defeated George Allen to claim the retiring Jim Webb Senate seat in Virginia. This race was of particular importance to AFGE members, as there are many federal employees living in Virginia. Talk about the impact of this outcome.
Jason, it was a great win. And, you know, Governor Kaine, now Senator Kaine, has been an absolute true friend of federal and D.C. government workers his entire career. He's a solid leader. He understands the issues of working men and women. He understands that people want to have a job that pays a living wage, have health care, have a pension plan, to be able to pursue educating their children. Senator Kaine understands the importance of making education affordable and providing student loans and Pell Grants and those type things. He's just right on every issue. And he understands the issue of the federal budget, that it is not just an issue of an expense problem. It's an income problem. If we would roll back the Bush tax cuts, most of the problems that we're seeing with the federal budget would disappear. That Senator Kaine, I'm so used to calling him Governor Kaine, Senator Kaine, he understands that, you know, it's an income problem. And when those people start paying their fair share of taxes, a lot of our budget crisis will disappear.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with J. David Cox, AFGE's national president. President Cox, another race that I imagine had particular importance to you was that in Maryland, Senate race with Senator Cardin keeping his seat. Tell me a little bit about that.
Senator Ben Cardin is just the best senator in the world. Obviously, he's my home state senator. And he and Senator Barbara Mikulski, they have always been true friends of working men and women. You look at their voting records consistently over and over. They are the ones out front pushing legislation for working men and women, for working families. They're just always there. They believe in equal rights. They believe in equal pay for equal work. All of those type issues. They are just absolute true friends. We're very excited about Senator Cardin's reelection, and he's just the best friend federal employees have ever had.
Can you share with the audience perhaps a lesser-known House or Senate race that really will impact AFGE favorably over the years?
Well, Montana, while it's a large geographical state, it's not a large populous state. And I just had an email a few minutes ago that Senator John Tester has been reelected in Montana, and he's been a great friend. He serves on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and he has stood up and stood so firm for veterans and their health care and their benefits and making sure that veterans receive the care that they deserve in this country. And has just been a leader on workers' rights, all those type things. And Claire McCaskill, Missouri was not a state that was in play very much in the presidential race, but Claire McCaskill has been one of the truest friends of AFGE, has stood firm on contracting out of government jobs and believes that insourcing is the way for the government to provide better services at a more affordable price. Those are just two races that AFGE is very, very excited about. And we're not high visibility as such, but great races, and I'm glad that people of such fine quality have been returned to the United States Senate.
And I imagine one newcomer to the Senate that you must be pretty excited about is that of Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts.
Oh, yes, Jason. I did a labor walk the other Saturday in Massachusetts with over 30 AFGE members. I have never seen such excitement going door to door, and every door that I knocked on, it was like, yes, I'm voting for Elizabeth Warren. Again, a person that understands what it is to get up every day, go to work, worry about having enough money to pay the bills, buy groceries, provide child care, to try to prepare to educate your children. And she is a jobs person. She will dig in and fight for jobs for working men and women. The Senate extremely excited about. And while many friends were returned to the House of Representatives, obviously the leadership of the House of Representatives remains in hands of people that have not been very friendly to federal employees or any type of working men and women. So we're a little disappointed in that arena, but we're extremely excited about the president and the Senate.
President Cox, just days before the election, this country was faced with a national natural crisis, and that was Superstorm Sandy. Talk a little bit about how federal employees have played a key role in the recovery of that storm.
Number one, FEMA was there and was on the ground doing everything that they are supposed to do. I mean, you look at the crisis situation. Yes, there are people that have lost their homes, that still have flooding, they're still without electricity, and they are in a true crisis in their lives. But the response of the federal government, they have been first and foremost right on hand doing those type things. You have not seen the negative publicity about FEMA failing to respond. And I think that's a clear example of what's happened with an Obama administration over a Bush administration. And if you remember, Governor Romney said, contract FEMA out and get rid of it. So they've done a great job. The Manhattan VA had to be evacuated due to flooding. The federal employees there made sure all of the veterans were out, leaving their own homes, many of their own homes being flooded and things like that. But they were there taking care of veterans and many of our employees, correctional officers and Bureau of Prisons. They remained on duty. They stayed at the prisons. They looked out the windows, saw their own vehicles going underwater and being flooded and their own homes being flooded. They remained on the job protecting the American public from those people that's been incarcerated. So, I mean, federal employees were on the job and doing a great job.
President Cox, what's one message that you want to communicate to AFGE's membership now that the elections are over?
You know, first off, I would applaud all the efforts of AFG's membership in electing the right people, you know, to leadership positions in this country. And the second is, you know, take a breather on Election Day, but then we have to immediately start talking to the members of Congress about the fact that we're facing sequestration. We are facing attempts to attack our pay and our benefits and attack our jobs and to lower the number of federal employees. And we understand the ground game, and I think we need to remind the members of Congress that, you know, we were out there, we got them elected, we want them to hold people accountable, we want them to, you know, roll back these Bush tax cuts and let those people that have not been paying their fair share pay that money. It's an income problem. It's not an expense problem in this country. And we need to stand very firm and be ready to a call to action anywhere that we've got to in holding every member of Congress accountable that they do the right thing by federal employees and Social Security and Medicare.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue with President Cox and also be joined by AFGE Legislative Representative Marilyn Park to discuss the importance of Veterans Day.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available.
These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're continuing with AFGE National President J. David Cox. President Cox, with the election behind us, another big day awaits, and that is Veterans Day. Joining us here for this conversation as well is AFGE Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. What does AFGE have planned to commemorate Veterans Day?
Number one, Jason, AFGE is certainly sending out messages to all of our membership about the importance of Veterans Day, and a large percentage of AFGE's members are veterans, and we applaud them and honor them for their service to this country. We are on the radio today with freedom of speech and freedom of the press in this country simply because of the men and women that have served this country so faithfully.
Now, there are a number of issues facing the Department of Veterans Affairs these days, not the least of which is agency funding. Marilyn, I'm wondering if you can give us some insight as to legislatively where funding stands for the agency.
If, in fact, we face sequestration, which is a big if for the whole federal government, the White House has finalized in September the fact that VA will be protected from any sequestration, which means that they are the veterans, depending on the Department of Veterans Affairs, will be able to continue to receive their benefits and health care at the same level, even if sequestration does go forward. In addition, the VA healthcare system, thanks to the hard work of veterans organizations and AFGE, do have what we call advanced funding for health care, which means every year now the hospital and clinics in VA are funded a year ahead of time, which allows for better staffing, better planning. And so even if we have a continuing resolution or the threat of sequestration, we know that our healthcare system is what we're going to have for the following year. So as far as the actual funding in the Department of Veterans Affairs, they have been protected and will continue to be funded quite well. However, veterans don't just depend on the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they depend on Social Security. They and their families, they depend on the Department of Labor for many protections, including protection of their veterans' preference and other jobs programs and many other agencies. So we veterans will be hurt if we don't fund these agencies properly.
When you're on the Hill and you're having these conversations, if someone says to you, well, the VA is protected, it won't be impacted by sequestration, and you respond by saying, yes, but veterans do rely heavily on many other programs in the federal government, what kind of response are you getting?
I think they really understand that veterans need the whole government. And we've come to the Hill, actually, when we've been facing threats to Social Security and had some very good events with our friends on the Hill and our Social Security brothers and sisters, too. And I think we have made that message clear, and we're going to continue to make that message that I think many people are under the misimpression that veterans receive all the income and benefits they need from the VA. But of course, veterans' benefits are only given to a percentage of people who are disabled, and to that extent, it's not 100%. So I think we need to continue to make that message clear.
And talk about the importance of that benefit. This isn't something where people are getting rich or making a lot of money. This is really to take care of their basic needs and help them after serving this country.
First of all, they have to make their case that they are entitled to service-connected benefits. And it's taken a long time for many of them to even prove that their injury was a result of service connection. And we've had some gains recently with toxic exposure from Vietnam and Gulf War, but it is not an easy battle to make, and they certainly continue to need many other services, even if they continue to get partial or full service-connected benefits. And in addition, the VA healthcare system only covers service-connected conditions, and so many people are not able to get everything from the VA, and we need to have a strong healthcare system throughout the country. But we are fortunate that the VA healthcare system is going to continue to operate as it is. And I think the bigger fear for us is that the VA healthcare system, even when funded on paper and left in the same structure that it's at, is always going to face the threat of contracting out and other erosions to the system. I mean, whether we hear it now from the former candidates from this last election cycle, we're going to continue to hear both inside and outside the VA calls, you know, in the private sector, as well as some people still in the VA, calls for privatizing pieces of the VA in different states, as well as generally making the VA more like a voucher system. That's not going away. We have to protect that.
President Cox, what is your response to those calls for privatization at the VA?
Number one, the VA healthcare system is the best healthcare system in this country. They provide the best services. The VA, many of the veterans suffer with PTSD and other type of illnesses that the VA is the absolute expert in providing those treatments. I will always oppose contracting out for those type of services. The VA does it better than the private sector can do it. The health care of a veteran is a very unique health care system. I mean, we just don't get people who have, had a shrapnel and bombs to blow off parts of their body and things like that in the general populace. I mean, it's a very unique health care system, and we need that VA to provide the uniqueness of the treatment of veterans.
Now, Marilyn, a minute ago you were talking about some of the challenges and difficulties that a veteran faces in trying to get those benefits. I'm wondering if either of you can share with me the emotional toll that that takes on a veteran who has been overseas fighting for our country and then coming back and waging another battle on the home front to take advantage of the rights that he or she has earned.
Oh, Jason, clearly, many veterans, after they return home, it takes them from months to, in some occasions, years to be awarded their service-connected disability. There has to be a lot of documentation and things of that nature. It's a frustrating process, and the system sometimes runs slow, and it's not that the employees don't do a good job, but obviously there hasn't been the adequate funding to fund enough claims representatives and those type folks to fund the claims as fast as I believe that they need to be funded. It's not an employee problem. It's a management problem of not having enough resources and enough people to get the work done. But always at the very end of that process, there is a veteran that their very life is being held in the balances dependent upon that service-connected disability claim.
Now, we just have a couple of minutes left here, but I want to get your take for the issue around whistleblower protections. I know that's an issue these days at the VA.
Oh, clearly. We had an instance where one of our physicians testified before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee over issues and blew the whistle about that there was inappropriate numbers or that the numbers were not correct about scheduling veterans for appointments and getting them in. And then there was retaliation against that employee at the Wilmington VA Medical Center. And we have very, very strong feelings about that. We want an environment where federal employees can step up and say that the system is not working properly and that there will not be retaliation by management officials against those employees.
Marilyn, quickly before we close out here, top legislative priorities for the VA Council in the years ahead?
Bargaining rights for our doctors and nurses that are equal to other federal employees. Veterans' preference, equal rights, whether you work in VA healthcare or any other part of the federal government. Right now, they don't have those rights. And better performance standards for the people who process claims. We need to have them judged by quality and not just quantity so that there isn't an assembly line mentality in the VA Benefits Administration.
J. David Cox, AFGE National President, Marilyn Park, AFGE Legislative Representative. Thank you both for sharing some insight on this very important holiday, Veterans Day, coming up here soon.
Thank you, Jason, and most of all, happy Veterans Day to all of our veterans, and God bless America's veterans.
Thank you, and happy Veterans Day.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll learn about FEMA's role in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy with AFGE Local 4060 President Robert Autry.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Robert Autry, the president of AFGE's Federal Emergency Management Agency, Local 4060. Robert, first time on the program. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Robert, people across the East Coast have been impacted by Superstorm Sandy. Talk about the work that FEMA has done in response to this storm.
We have deployed a number of people to go out to assist the disaster survivor. We have on the ground, I think, approximately 2,300-some-odd employees. I myself have recently volunteered to put my name on the list to go out also, and I did this past Saturday. We also have other agencies, state and local partners, who are helping us in this effort to try to get people's lives back in order.
Robert, while you're an agency accountant, you have been trained to help disaster victims, and you did so, in fact, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Talk about your experiences then in 2005 and what drove you to participate in the recovery efforts.
Yes, sir. At FEMA, when you come on board, the agency has this description about employees going out on disasters. So that's one of your main functions outside of your regular duties and responsibilities. So when disaster hit during, I should say, the hurricane season time from June 1st through November 30th, we know at that time that we could be called to help out with the disasters. So in 2005, when I was called for Katrina, I was deployed on a 30-day assignment. However, my 30-day assignment turned into approximately 90 days, 3 months. And the reason for that was a lot of the disaster survivors that we were helping at that time, FEMA was sending people back home for whatever the reason, and the public took exception to that because they said, wait a minute, FEMA's leaving us here. And the agency decided to put out a memo to stop a lot of employees from coming back home. And normally your tour duty for a disaster assignment can last for approximately 45 days straight. And then they'll give you what I call a two-week break. And as an employee, you could take that two-week break. But during that time frame, I felt the compassion to stay the whole 90 days.
When you were dealing with the aftermath and you were stationed in Mississippi, what did you see? What were some of the sights and the sounds that you experienced while you were there?
I experienced a lot of the locals who needed housing, and there was a gas shortage, and it was all kind of stuff. We had to stay at least 2 hours from our site that we had to do our normal duty work. So I had to drive back and forth 2 hours each day. My work schedule started off for approximately 16 hours day shift. Then eventually it was brought down to 14 hours days to eventually 12 hours a day. And that was 7 days a week around the clock. The people needed food. They needed water, all the basic necessities. Some of them needed electricity. So debris moved from the housing, the property. It was a lot of stuff. So what happened, we eventually went into the different neighborhoods door by door. We talked to the different disaster survivors, got their information, and we prioritized things based upon the medical need of that particular individual. So we put that report at the top of the list. So if it was an asthmatic type patient versus someone who didn't have asthmatic problem, I wouldn't say it was put down on the lower level, but we gave more of a high priority to the person who had that medical need.
When you were going door to door, knocking on doors, offering your assistance to the victims, what kind of response did you get from them?
At the time, it was a little mixed because under the old FEMA, as I would say, since I've been there since December 79, FEMA was an independent agency by itself. But in 2003, we was under Department of Homeland Security. And when Department of Homeland Security took over, we had to go through what I've called different steps of approval before we can go out on disasters. So if we was an independent agency under the old FEMA agency, we would have went out on a disaster in day one. But up under DHS FEMA, we went out, I think, on the third day. And that delay kind of put us in a bad position with the public because they kept saying, where's FEMA? Where's FEMA? And when we got down there to the disaster site, I was stationed in, assigned to the state of Mississippi. People was kind of upset with us. So, matter of fact, on the first couple of days, we had to take off our FEMA tires and just go with our plain clothing so people wouldn't know who we was at that particular point in time, because some people actually got shot at or whatever else you want to call it, out of frustration.
What did that experience have on you personally, not just the negative, but the positive and the toll that it may have taken on you personally? I know that you left your daughter behind to go and help these victims. What did the whole experience have on you?
The whole experience, you know, my mission was to complete the job. My heart and compassion went out to the people. I like helping people. When FEMA was created April 1st, 1979, by President Carter, the first thing that I did fresh out of college, I said, wait a minute, this is an agency like helping people. So that was right up my alley. So when I got to the state of Mississippi to help the residents or the disaster survivor, my experience was basically to show them that we cared. We was there to assist them, to get them the federal assistance that they needed. And as a matter of fact, I even climbed the top of a couple of houses to put up the tarps and different things like that. I was putting myself at risk, but I felt that I needed to do this because this old lady, she was a widow, and she didn't have anybody around to assist. So being the type of person I am as a gentleman, I extended that on my own, not at the government expense, but at my personal expense. It was a positive relationship that we developed with a lot of people before we left.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Robert Autry, the president of AFGE's FEMA Local 4060. Robert, as you mentioned, there were some of the disaster victims who had a negative feeling about FEMA at the time and questioned the timeliness of the response. But since then, how has the agency improved? Where have you seen areas of improvement that have made the agency better?
I want to say that a lot of the red tape, the bureaucracy and different things has been cut out. We're in a proactive mode. We want to be there day one. We want to respond to the disaster survivors immediately and as quickly as possible. As a matter of fact, our 1-800 number, let me spell that out, is if you want federal assistance, it's 1-800-621-3362. And what we do, we try to get people to call in, and our length of time is to try to assist the disaster victim within a 15-minute time frame. And back during the olden days under Katrina, we did not have that mechanism built into our process. So we're kind of, like I say, leaning forward, trying to do the best we can to connect with everybody.
Of particular note in this instance with Superstorm Sandy was how prepared the agency was in advance, having dispatched workers to potential sites in advance of the storm, ready to go, so that when the aftermath and the rescue and cleanup efforts were underway, people were already in place. How important was that for the agency and for the victims who needed that help?
All right, I'm glad you asked that, because what we do is up front, initially, we send out what we call our urban and search rescue team, and basically they go to the different buildings, houses, or whatever else you want to call them, and they go inside and they look for people, try to basically save their lives during this hurricane or disaster. And they will mark different buildings if the structure is not well on its foundation to stay out of it. They'll put a little X on the building. So when we, as at the time, come up behind the urban search rescue team, we come behind them as community relations specialists to go out into the different buildings and talk to the residents. The urban search rescue team does a wonderful job for the safety, not only the disaster victim, but the people who volunteered, deployed for the different disasters.
What drew you to FEMA?
What drew me to FEMA was the fact that I grew up with a core belief that my mother kind of instilled in all our family members. I have two sisters and one brother. And she said, if you see somebody that need help, help them out, don't pass them by, that type of thing. So throughout my life, I've been involved in a lot of different situations. even on the streets where I went out and broke up, some fights and different things like that, because I believe that we all should be cognizant of the fact that God put us on this earth to live as safely as possible, not to destroy it.
And do you think that some of those beliefs that your mother instilled in you as a young boy also drew you then and encouraged you to join something like the labor movement?
Yes, because once again, labor movement is about helping people. The way that I like to put this, God put special people in a special situation at the right time in special places to do his will. So as a righteous person, we want to do that which is right. If there's something wrong, let's bring it to management attention and try to get it straightened out. My motto at FEMA is that we're striving to make FEMA a better place to work. And to do that, we want to make sure that we have the compassion, the integrity, the fairness, and the respect in which to do those things. And those four words that I just mentioned is a driving force behind the core value of FEMA, too.
You mentioned that you've been with the agency since 1979. How has the agency changed over the years during your career?
It has changed. We have had nine different administrators. I would like to say the one administrator that stands out to me the most is James Lee Witt. He was administrator for 8 years, from 1993 to 2001. And I'm digging way back in my memory bank here. And basically, James Lee Witt put FEMA on the map from a publicity standpoint. The news media, the television station, everybody knew us, okay? He brought along that emergency management professionalism, and he passed that along to his managers under him. And his basic thing was, hey, let's make sure we treat everybody right, give everybody that respect. So that kind of fed into a lot of the employees coming to FEMA feeling good about it. We was a family. We roll up our sleeve, and we go down in the trenches, and we help each other out.
Many times when people hear about the federal government, they only think about it from a very large perspective, a 30,000-foot view, if you will. Talk about your commitment as an individual, as a singular employee to the public at large.
I like to say that, as the old saying goes, you put in an honest, hard day's work. I believe that if you get hired by somebody and you're on that mission, you want to help that organization achieve its mission. And by doing so, you want to apply certain principles. And your principles should allow you to meet the agency objective. I also believe in punctuality does count. Being on time help with everything. So I think that my mother instilled in us those tremendous value of hard work, don't give up, apply your principles, and dedicate yourself to the will to achieve anything you want to accomplish in this world.
Lastly, Robert, tell me one thing about FEMA that people might not know.
Sure. I can give you a little educated point of view here. Let me break it down this way. Under the old FEMA, we used to have what I call the two R's, the P and the M. Two R's basically is response, recovery, preparedness, and mitigate. That's the core value of FEMA. In 2003, when Department of Homeland Security took us over, the agency became what I would call the two R's, the two P's, and the M. If you can remember the one P that I just told you in terms of preparedness, the other P up on the Department of Homeland Security is just for protection. So under Department of Homeland Security, FEMA has response, recovery, preparedness, protection, and mitigate. And those core values that I mentioned earlier about compassion, fairness, integrity, and respect. And that's what gets us moving to do the job that we need to do.
Robert Autry, the president of AFGE's FEMA Local 4060. Robert, we appreciate your time here on the program today and your commitment to the American people. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been enjoyable, and I will continue to look out to help the disaster survivor and try to get everybody else on board, too, as a union president.
Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE National President J. David Cox, Legislative and Political Director Beth Moten, Legislative Representative Marilyn Park, and Local 4060 President Robert Autry. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you by the American Federation of Government Employees.